We are, because we're going to be talking peas, and when you think of weather, you think about the fact that we've got split pea soup. Interesting. So we will be talking about those little recipes. But in our pantry item today, I thought we'd talk about peas, and I found this fantastic article in the Australian Permaculture. It's called PIP. It's a great little magazine that I found along the way. And they're talking about one of the most ancient old world vegetables, the garden pea, can be traced to the Bronze Age. It was domesticated in Europe and later in southern Russia, Armenia, northern India, Pakistan, and the mountains of Ethiopia. Primitive peas were found in the city of Troy, and this vegetable reached China early in the Tang Dynasty, 600 to 900 BCE. And isn't that interesting? Because when you start to think about different vegetables, but the storage, I think, is something that you look forward to and think about. And I remember that as kids, we always had that jar of split peas and dried peas. But different types of varieties, of course. And we have the different sort of smooth-seeded field pea used in dried soups and pies. And then we have the wrinkle-seeded snow pea with the flowers that are nearly white and which is eaten for its succulent pods. And then the green shell pea was only developed last century. And I think that looking at all the different varieties, they mentioned here that the Yates for Australia had about 50 varieties in their 1904 catalogue. And there was 200 strains in France listed in their different varieties of peas. But the first variety of garden pea was actually perfected in Holland and become known to the French as the little pea. But the Victorian English were the first to develop and catalogue the separate varieties of peas. And many of the 19th century names display quite Victorian chauvinistic names. For example, Prince Albert, Victoria, Champion of England, William the First, the Conqueror. And in response, the French had varieties with such names as Napoleon and the like. So saving and cultivating the seeds seem to be something that we're still doing today. And after we listen to Gary and some of his information on his gardening show, he always talks about the fact of planting these peas and beans directly into the ground, because that activates the growth and they start going. But looking at some of the recipes, I found, as I always try to bring some of those free recipes in one of the throw-out ones from the supermarket, they've done a beautiful cauliflower pea and mint risotto. And instead of using the rice, they've actually used the cauliflower. And a lot of people, of course, if you're intolerant to some different types of grains or whatever, you go for the alternative. So what they talk about here is using the whole cauliflower cut into florets. And you work in a couple of batches. You place the cauliflower and some capers, about a tablespoon. Of course, capers give that beautiful salty flavour. And you process that mixture until it becomes rice. Just do it in batches. The reason being is if you do it all together and it's too much, you'll find some will actually almost liquidise and some will be too chunky. So take your time with that. And I'm sure that what you could do, you could do a lot more. So if you're doing something down the end of the week there, you actually have that already done. So you're going to heat some butter in the pan, add onion and garlic, of course, always. Add the cauliflower rice and some stock, probably about 1.5 cups of vegetable stock, and bring to a gentle simmer. And cover and cook, stirring for about 10 minutes until the cauliflower is just cooked. And then you are going to add your stock and peas. Sorry, you put your peas in there. So about 2 cups. So far we've got a whole cauliflower, tablespoon of capers that have been processed. You're going to brown that off with some onions and garlic. And then when it's just stuff, you put your stock in, 2 cups of peas. And then after that is cooked, stir through some parmesan, some spinach and some shredded mint. And I'd be looking at a generous serve of mint, because it does actually break down. And then some lemon zest and a little bit of lemon juice. Stand for 5 minutes. Stir through a little bit of cream. And that's it. You can pop some salmon on top. They've actually put some flaked hot smoked salmon. But making that risotto out of that cauliflower looks absolutely brilliant. And I often do a regular risotto using little peas. And that's the one thing I do actually look for. In the supermarket, you will see that there are frozen peas. Look for the baby ones. They may be that little bit, not that much more expensive, but a little bit more expensive. But when you're doing something like a risotto and you're just going to be having a stock, whether it be vegetable or chicken, and your risotto and the peas is the main flour, as the main flavour, you want to make sure that you're going to be using something that's quite delicious. Now, another recipe, I looked through a couple of my very old cookbooks, and they make this beautiful style, French-style green peas. And this is when you're actually sautéing with lettuce and a few goodies. So to do that, it's a petit pot, they call it, two shallots. So you actually cook off some shallots with a little bit of butter, a couple of lettuce leaves. You might like to use a cos or something with a little bit of holding. And you put that in a saucepan and cover and stew for about 5 minutes very gently. Add about 500 grams of peas and half a cup of water and one slice of ham, thinly chopped. If you don't want to use ham, you could use some carrot. And that is actually a beautiful side dish. And if you think of those nice flavours, a lot of the times people forget that lettuce is something that you can actually poach and cook. The Chinese do a few dishes with it, and the same as the French. Another way to do the peas, of course, peas in cream. So if you're doing your cooked peas, have them already steamed or however you cook your peas. Add a tablespoon of cream per cup of peas, and then be very, very generous with chopped parsley and chives and a little bit of Dijon mustard just to give that flavour. And this is just a humble pea that you've turned around and made into something that is quite delicious. And, of course, when we talk about the pantry pea, we're going to be talking about the dried pea. And everyone knows that we're using split peas here. And if you're making your split pea soup, I usually soak my split peas overnight. And you usually find you get a little bit of a white foamy liquid on top. Skim that off because, you know, you want that to be clean. I usually put mine in the colander and give them a good rinse after I've soaked them. But I think this is one of the most delicious. So place your split peas in a bowl, wash them, and then pour boiling water over them, leave them to soak. The longer you soak them, the better it's going to be. A lot of people say they've made the soup and it's got a bit of crunch in it. Really, do yourself a favour. Do it overnight. I think it's so much easier. And, of course, then you go to your butcher and get your ham bone or your bacon bones, and you're going to be cooking that. But I always start with frying off the usual suspects, the onion, some celery, carrot, all finely chopped, a couple of bay leaves. Some people don't put garlic, up to you. I sort of tend to put garlic in everything. And once you've actually got that all cooked down and just nice translucent, then you start to put your drained, soaked split peas and your ham bone and your stock and let that cook all day. A lot of us have got slow cookers, and that's a nice way to do that. But looking in the English recipes, which was quite interesting, when they do their mushy peas and you can correct me and phone up if you're listening and you're English and I'm wrong here, but they tend to serve their mushy peas with fish and chips. And I gave a recipe a few weeks ago when I made some fish cake recipes that you actually use mushy peas in there. And it's a beautiful combination that you use your potato and mushy peas, same way you do your salmon patties, but just put the mushy peas. So we're probably thinking along the same lines of flavour. But this particular recipe I found, it says, learn how to make this traditional English and Irish side dish for fish and chips or a meat pie. This delicious and healthy vegetarian dish can be customised to your taste with mint, cream or lemon juice. So what they've indicated here is 4 cups of green split peas, 2 tablespoons of baking soda, bicarb of soda, 8 cups of water, 5 half cups of filtered water, so that's 1.3 litres, and 2 1/4 teaspoons of salt. So you place the dried split peas in a large Dutch oven, which is just a great big cooking pot, and sprinkle the baking soda on top. And I have a memory that my mum used to do this too. Boil the 8 cups of water and pour it into the pot, stir to combine, then cover and let sit at room temperature for about 12 hours. Drain them in a large colander, making sure to rinse them to remove that baking soda. But it probably just helps to actually open that split pea a little bit. Return them to the Dutch oven. We would be saying slow cooker or big pot with a heavy base, and cover them with water. Stir in the salt and cover. Set the pot over a medium-high heat and bring to a simmer. Then turn the heat down to low. Let it simmer for about 10 to 15 minutes, stirring frequently until they are thick and mushy. Skim off any foam and be careful not to overcook, or they will not be as chunky. If you're serving them with fish and chips, stir in the cream and salted butter. And for a minty version, add the mint sauce to taste and fresh chopped mint leaves. For a tangy version, add freshly squeezed lemon juice. Now, in that particular recipe that I gave you for the fish cakes, it had mint sauce in it too. So this is actually going to a very English taste. And I think that some of the versions that they've put here, if you're in a hurry, use frozen green peas instead of the dried ones and use less water. For a thicker version, use less water, of course. Serve with lemon juice, cream mint sauce and butter. And if you've got leftovers, you can just put in a zip tie. And I think these are the sort of things that we really do enjoy to have up our sleeve, because there's some nice things there. I mean, I could imagine having that poached pea with the lettuce and stock. That would be delicious with something like a roast chicken or flavours like that. But another really nice recipe that I did see was eggs and smashed peas on toast. And what they've done here is boil some frozen peas, cook for a minute or so until bright green, strain, transfer the peas to a bowl and mash with a fork, add ricotta and some season with some pepper, and pop that on toast and put a poached egg on top. And that would be very delicious. And, you know, it would be a really nice filling if you're making your own tortellinis, where you could use the pea and ricotta and some parmesan. I'd be actually doing that and putting that inside my little dumplings or tortellinis or raviolis or however you're making them. And these are different versions from the humble pea, which is just fantastic. And looking at our gardening guide, I didn't have the best luck with my snow peas this last year, but just in the particular subtropical, we're talking about getting our peas in July, so we're almost into that August time, so I reckon we could still push that a little bit. We'll have to ask Gary about that. But remember, straight into the ground is what he's always talking about, to get that beautiful quick connection with the earth. And they start growing straight from there. So there's some really good ideas for some very, very simple things from one of the most ancient vegetables, peas. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the kids' pantry. And what I've had a look at is some dietary guidelines for children from 4 to 8. Interesting how much we think they should be eating, and actually what they talk about is the recommended through the Raising Children, the Australian Planning website. We'll be back shortly with on 101.5 with Community Kitchen. And welcome back to Community Kitchen. Talking to a lot of different young mums and, you know, starting out with children and starting them at school, and they're tired and all those little things that happen. And I thought that we'd look at some of the little dietary guidelines for children from 4 to 8, because that's the time when they really do change their patterns. A lot of pressure when they're going to, you know, kindy and starting at prep. And also, when you think about the fact that if you're aiming for 1.5 serves of fruit, for example, 4.5 serves of veggies, 1.5 to 2 serves of dairy, 4 serves of grain, 1.5 serves of lean meat, nuts and nut paste and legumes. That's a lot of food to try and actually get into the system when a lot of them can be very little peckish bird eaters. And also liquid. Children need lots of water. It's the cheapest, healthiest and most thirst-quenching drink. And they need lots of that too. And a lot of the times when they've had their water, that's it. So let's have a look and just going from these guidelines, I thought it was quite interesting. So fruit from one serve is one medium apple, a banana, an orange or a pear, or two plums, a cup of dried or canned fruit, and that offers 1.5 serves a day. Vegetables, for example, one serve is half a medium potato or sweet potato or corn, or half a cup of cooked veggies. Now, when you think about that, that's quite a little pile on the plate to get a child to eat that. That's broccoli, spinach, carrots or pumpkin. Or one cup of green leafy or raw salad vegetables, or a half a cup of cooked, dried or canned beans or lentils. And that offers 4.5 serves a day. Grains and cereals, one serve equals one slice of bread or half a cup of cooked rice, pasta, noodles, quinoa or polenta, or half a cup of porridge, or 2/3 of a cup of wheat cereal flakes, or 1/4 of a cup of muesli, or one crumpet or a small English muffin, and that offers 4 serves a day. Wholemeal, of course, is really good for kids. And with the dairy, one serve equals one cup of milk, or one cup of milk alternative like soya, rice milk, and at least 100 milligrams of added calcium per 100 mil, or 2 slices of cheese, or 3/4 a cup of yogurt, or 1/2 cup of ricotta cheese, and that offers you 1.5 serves. Now, if you think about 3/4 a cup of yogurt, that's a big serve for a child to actually to get through. And meat and poultry on top of that, one serve equals 65 grams of cooked lean beef or meat. If you look in the palm of your hand, and that usually works out to about 100 gram in that that one little square of the palm is 100 grams. So children are really looking at about 2/3 of that for their requirement. Also, that works out to 80 grams of cooked lean chicken or turkey, or 100 grams of cooked fish fillet, or 170 grams of cooked tofu, or 2 large eggs, or 1 cup of cooked lentils, chickpeas, canned beans, or 30 grams, which is 1.5 tablespoons of peanuts, almonds or sunflower seeds. And, of course, you've got your healthy fats. You can include one serve of unsaturated fat per day in cooking, baking, spreads or desserts, dressing. So one serve equals 1 to 2 teaspoons of olive, granola or rice bran or margarine, or 1 tablespoon of avocado. So thinking about how to get those vegetables and goodies into the meal, and I thought back of some of the menus and ideas I've offered in the last few weeks. And when you look at something like a mac and cheese, for example, if you're going to be making a mac cheese, you've got your cereal, you've got your cheese, you've got your milk, then you can start to add, if you put some corn in there or some spinach or some broccoli and add that to that meal, that's got quite a good combination. If you want to actually put the meat in there, pardon me, you could add some shredded chicken, and that is giving a good combination of all the goodies. Another thing, of course, muffins. You can do a lot of beautiful grated vegetables into your muffins, and I think that makes a big difference. Fritters. Going back to the muffins. Once you've got your grated vegetables in there, you can put cheeses. And, of course, if you're using a whole grain flour, you're covering all those recommendations. And then, of course, my favourite with kids, which I found that every time we do a cooking demonstration, we're out and about and we make fritters, kids love them. And the combination, of course, you can do grated zucchinis. I love the grated zucchinis with peas and halloumi. That's a really good combination. If I'm doing corn, I usually do some corn. I'll put some chilies or spring onions in there, and that makes a really interesting little flavour. And, of course, don't forget just plain grated potato. They make a really, really good fritter. The only thing is you have to drain that moisture out. What I find is the best, if I'm making a potato one, I line my colander with a chucks, grate into that, and then wring that thing so tight that you've got all that liquid coming out. And of course, then you're adding to that just a little bit of flour and one egg, mixing that up, and they are absolutely delicious as a little tiny fritter. We did a cocktail party just recently and I made those, and we did a nice salsa and salmon and cream cheese. So you can lift that, change it around and make that a little bit fancy for adults too. And of course, we talk about French toast. This is a great way to get those eggs for kids, and you can make them in all different ways. You can also do the toasty where you've got cheese grilled and then dip that whole sandwich into your egg and fry that off. So there's just a few little ideas to actually try and get that corporation. Also, sorry, with the fritters, you can do those with your berries, your bananas, and grated apple is just absolutely delicious if you put that into a batter, into your muffins, lots of different ways that you can actually put those vegetables and get that serve into that child's food. Because if they do have just a piece of chocolate cake, for example, that is quite a big portion of their daily requirement for food and how much they can fit inside those little tummies. Whereas if you're actually grating off some vegetables or grating off some fruits or cheeses or fish cakes or fish patties or whatever you're doing, it does make a beautiful combination, and it actually covers all those food groups. So I hope that helps you out. Just a few little ideas for the kids between 4 and 8. We'll be back very shortly, and we're going to talk about some different ideas for the family table. And welcome back to Community Kitchen. You will recall a few weeks ago I talked about the different vinegars. And I found this wonderful article about the healing power of apple cider vinegar, which you've all heard about. I remember years and years ago when I was at school, I used to have this school mistress, and she used to say, girls, every morning 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar. And, of course, I didn't listen. I probably could have been an elite athlete or something like that if I had listened to her. But evidently, it's loaded with enzymes, probiotics, and raw apple cider vinegar is an essential item on your cooking and medicine shelves. And it's a very mineral-rich and contains calcium, magnesium, iron, manganese, copper, potassium, zinc, phosphorus, selenium, and sodium, and all the vitamins. And they're also present, which is incredible. But the one thing that I was amazed about, when making your bone broth or stock, always add your apple cider vinegar to your water. And this helps to release the minerals stored in the bones. And interesting, when I do my Chinese chicken, I usually do some Chinese cooking wine, and it has that same sort of acidic, so I'm guessing that this is the same reason that they're doing it. And what I loved about this particular article is that a lot of research is going into the uses of apple cider, and some are showing it decreases blood sugar levels, blood pressure, reduces asthma symptoms. It's also helpful in treating acid reflux or gastro reflux disease, and it promotes better gut health, and it adds a boost to the probiotics. And I think that I was saying to someone the other day that they were getting a lot of heartburn or reflux, and I said, oh, well, I often think that a lot of people are recommended just to take that little tiny bit of apple cider vinegar. And the other thing, of course, it's been used as a antiseptic and disinfectant. One thing that I thought was quite interesting is that how to make your own. And I buy mine. I always make sure that I buy an organic one. It's always a little bit cloudy, but apparently this is good because it has the mother in it. And this particular recipe talks about the organic apple scraps, filtered non-chlorinated water, a tablespoon of organic sugar plus a cup of water. So what you're doing is you're going to put all the ingredients in a glass jar, but leave about 1 inch space on the top. The scraps need to be under the water, so weigh them down. And this particular recipe uses a small cup turned upside down, and cover the jar with a piece of cheesecloth and secure with a rubber band. So you're stirring the mixture every couple of days, and after 2 to 3 weeks, you remove the apple scraps, leave the liquid to finish fermenting for another 4 weeks or so, and you will need to taste the vinegar to see when to stop the process. Leave it fermenting until it gets quite tangy. You may see a mother or a scooby grow in the vinegar. This is great. Keep it stored in some of the apple cider vinegar, and you can add the scoby to further batches of apple scraps when you're making that. A little bit like when you make your ginger beer. Of course, you get that little bit of fermentation. So I'm assuming that I notice that down the bottom, it's just like this of mine, there's this little thing happening there, so that must be the little scoby. But of course, there's two different methods. The other method uses a non-pasteurized apple juice. So you put the apple juice and the mother in a glass jar and cover with cheesecloth and secure with rubber band, and leave the juice to convert to apple cider vinegar. Take a couple of months. Just keep checking on the taste. But one of the things that I really liked about this particular article was the fact that they talk about flavouring the vinegar. So you can put some orange peel in there, and apparently it makes you feel more energetic, happier, and supports your immune system. Putting ginger in your apple cider vinegar supports your digestive health. Turmeric as an anti-inflammatory. Rose petal mood enhancing helps you to feel more positive. We might have to sprinkle that all over the world at the moment. Lavender, keeping a really calming influence. Lemon balm calms the upset stomachs and lifts your mood. Pineapple sage supports your upper respiratory. And calendula petals, it's an antiseptic and can help regulate menstruation. So these are things that are really quite interesting. And what I love is the fact that a lot of us are going back to the old basics because of the fact, you know, we've noticed a trend of people shopping more locally, people creating. If you're on Facebook or Instagram, you'll see there's a lot of great information out there about how to preserve, how to garden, how to make things. So these are just adding to it. So when we go to this, the another little recipe I think here is really good is the scrub recipe. Originating from the Middle East, both the Babylonians and the Romans had a version. A scrub is a fruit-flavoured vinegar syrup traditionally used in drinks. Scrub have a long life shelf because apple cider vinegar acts as a preservative, so you'll be able to enjoy all those flavours. And that's what we're talking about with the enhancing. So you get 2 cups of fruit in a sterilised glass jar. I find sterilising glass jar, either pop them into the dishwasher or I put my stove on about 100, wash the jar, and then put a bit of baking paper on the rack in the oven, and then put the jar upside down on that and just leave it for, I don't know, an hour or so, and you'll usually find that'll sterilise. Bring 2 cups of apple cider vinegar just to the boil, then remove from the heat and pour the hot vinegar over the fruit. Leave a 1-inch space, 2.5 centimetre space at the top of the jar, and cap tightly. Leave the jar in a cool pantry for up to a month. Strain the fruit through the cheesecloth and place the flavoured apple cider in a saucepan. Add about 1.5 cups of sugar and bring to the boil and dissolve the sugar. And then you place the liquid in sterilised jars and store in the fridge. To use it, you add 2 tablespoons into still frizzy or soda water or something, or use as a mixer in cocktails. And they also, which I love, they also add the flavour to salad dressings, glazes and marinades. And if you think about that, you could make some really beautiful ones. So imagine the orange rind, if you're going to be using that with your chickens and goodies. I'm sure that lemon would be exactly the same. And pineapple sage, which mine is just flowering at the moment, the most beautiful, beautiful red flowers. You can eat those, but it is just such a lovely sage to have in your garden, and that would be just beautiful on so many things. pardon me. So that's a really nice little recipe for, you know, ideas for some recipes. And, of course, I think I've mentioned this before, I often just grate beetroot and I will heat up my apple cider vinegar and pour that over the grated vinegar. You can put some cloves in there. You can put star anise, peppercorns, a little bit of sugar and a bit of salt. But that grated beetroot with the vinegar over it and left, I always pop mine in the fridge, is just beautiful. You can have that, you know, with your burgers or on the side with a steak or with pork chops or just in the salad with some lovely feta or halloumis. And it's a really nice alternative. But the apple cider, of course, for cleaning, it would be quite expensive. A lot of people use the other sorts of vinegars. But it is very good for wiping down your cutting boards and goodies like that, because it's one thing. Remember when we had to get rid of the wooden boards? I think I was probably the only person who didn't, because I love having those wooden boards. Never, ever had any drama, but I do give them a good scrub down and a drying in the sun or in the bench, and I think that that helps. So they use that the apple cider to actually do that. I think that's a great little thing, and there's so many different ideas for the apple cider. And just remember that if you do have any of those little medical problems, I love the idea that if you're feeling a little bit of a heartburn or reflux, a little teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, you wouldn't think it, would you, that it's got an acid on top of the acid, but it actually tends to even that out a little bit. So just a few little ideas. And, of course, when you start to think about all the beautiful summer's coming, we're going to make some lovely salad dressing. So if you've got some of those flavoured vinegars, and if it's just for home, you may as well make a couple and give them away, because it's going to be too much to keep on the shelf. But I know that last year at the Redcliffe Food Festival, I bought a fantastic orange dressing, and it was a balsamic with orange in it. So the apple cider would be the same. And I use that so readily for so many different cooking, just pouring it over, as I said, roast chook or pork, or just drizzling that on some rice if I'm making a rice salad, and it just brings a new flavour to the whole lot. But anyway, that's me for today. We've had one of the most ancient veggies, of course, peas. Think about that. You can make a beautiful risotto using the peas, or, as I mentioned from the fresh cookbook, it's one of the throwaway ones from the supermarket. They have some lovely recipes there for some cauliflower risotto, using the cauliflower rather than the actual rice. Smashed peas with the ricotta. Beautiful idea. Think about getting creative with some things for the kids, getting those vegetables and fruits in, and they're great little ideas to pack into the lunchbox. And, of course, you can feel quite happy that little Johnny and Janie are having their grated vegetables within their muffin or their fritters or their little containers of mac cheese. Remember, you can cook them in a little muffin tin and make them quite delicious. And have a look out for that apple cider vinegar. Get a little bit creative with that. And I'll be with you next week. Have a beautiful week, and hopefully that Westley disappears. And remember what Gary said, water all the time, water low, and constantly when you've got this Westley around. Thanks for joining me on Community Kitchen.